This is We Are What We Overcome. What you're about to hear are the ramblings and reflections of three ordinary people, drawing on their own personal and occasionally professional experiences. These conversations are unprepared, subjective, and should not be taken as medical advice or instruction. Anyone seeking help should always carry out their own research, or better yet, speak to a professional about their circumstances.
Yep. Let's not mention the lack of audience.
Neil's to blame for the background noise, I think is the important thing.
Generally, we'll just acknowledge an audience if there's one there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, we don't need to. Yeah.
Hello.
We got one person. Jasmine's trying to ignore
she's
us while we
cool
talk in the room.
To be here, but she's here.
Had to flee the hipstery farm because she couldn't meet the standard. Ow.
We Are What We Overcome on this occasion features musician Matt McGuinness, improviser Nick Tyler, and psychotherapist Wes Evans. Sit back, enjoy, and remember, it's good to talk.
Okay, welcome to the Hyde Park Book Club in sunny old Leeds. I think we're here, aren't we?
We're somewhere between Leeds and somewhere else.
Yeah, and we've established in previous conversations that wherever we are, we're about 2.5 hours away from where I live, apparently.
I think we should do one in your kitchen and then you do.
Yeah,
you
and then I can't
see 2.5 hours from where you live. Yeah.
Just for the benefit of the audience there, we were just planning out and plotting future venues and trying to strike a balance between where we all live and some near you two, some near me, and some equally as inconvenient. And yeah, we're very quickly.
Do you know, after all the gigs I've been doing, and I have a big long list of things like, is it accessible? Do they have a good contact with local communities? Is there a decent bar? Is the coffee good? And the new one I'm going to raise, how far it is from your house,
yes,
is my
new criteria.
I think these are important. It's worth mentioning that should you happen to be listening to this and you are aware of a venue near you that might be interested in hosting a podcast like this, giving us a room to just chat with some people in, that would be super useful.
That would.
Because we only live in some places,
yeah,
and other places that we don't live in, we don't know as well, which
that's
not surprising.
Right. They could message us on the Facebook page. We overcome the podcast.
My goodness, yes, that's worth mentioning. We have a Facebook page. Facebook.com/WeAreWhatWeOvercomePodcast.
If you just search We Are What We Overcome, the podcast, you should find us pretty easily.
That seems reliable, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Use the power of the internet to find things out.
Yeah. Or even search on Google. Facebook. It has a search function, so.
Everyone searches on Google.
Yeah, that's true.
It does.
Anyway.
Later we'll tell you how to use Facebook.
When we've figured it out ourselves.
This is true. But we find ourselves in the Hyde Park Book Club once more for our We Are What We Overcome podcast, where we want to talk and have an honest conversation about mental health and stuff, largely informed by our own personal experiences. We are not doctors. Although Wes is kind of partway towards that.
Yeah,
but not a doctor.
You're
not a proper doctor, are you?
No, I'm not a proper doctor at all.
That's why I tell my friends they've got PhDs.
Yeah.
It's not in medicine. Not a real doctor.
Shall we do introductions on that note?
Yeah.
Sure.
So I'm Wes. I live not too far away from here.
It's 2.5 hours away, isn't it?
Sunny Lancashire. I'm a psychotherapist. And I am happy to be here once again.
Oh. Well, my name's Nick. I live in Nottingham. I'm an improviser. I work in publishing and stuff. I'm also happy to be here, although it's very much a glasses day because my eyes are tired.
And I'm Matt, and I'm from Derby, and I'm a musician, mostly, but other things as well that pay the bills.
Hmm. We're never just one thing, Matt.
No.
And Matt and Nick live about 2.5 hours away from me.
Is she a checking thing?
Yeah.
Let's do that.
Shall I go first?
Sure.
I feel a bit anxious, actually. The last podcast, I said, we were all fine, weren't we?
Did the immediate lie that we rail against all the time.
Yeah. Really disappointed that we were all fine, weren't you?
I was, yeah. I also thought it wasn't true either, particularly for me.
Oh, okay.
So
I just lied.
I mean, we all said we were fine. I said, yeah, I'm fine as well.
Oh, you got dragged along by peer pressure.
So I'm not, and I'm slightly anxious, and I've been thinking about it, actually. I'm anxious about the future, but things I either have no control over or things that I've got no chance of happening. So how stupid is that?
That reminds me of a recent episode we did, actually.
So
we did one on anxiety, and we said just that, really, that was seemed to be the gist, didn't it?
I should listen back to
that. Maybe you should. It might help you. I don't know. What are you worrying about?
The one that's constant at the moment is climate change, which is real, but there's still nothing I can do about it. And then there's a few other personal things which actually haven't got any real basis in fact. So There you go. Happy times.
I always enjoy you talking about your anxiety, because it always feels when you talk about that you have the precise solution to your concerns available to you immediately. It's like, yeah, this is a thing that isn't real. Okay. I think you found the key to that issue.
Yeah. Easier said than done, Nick.
That's true. Yeah, it doesn't help unlock it necessarily.
How are you doing, Nick?
I'm all right, actually. I had quite a nice weekend. I'm kind of tired. I was at a science fiction fantasy convention yesterday. Lovely little one-day affair in Edgelet, which is in Derby at the nice quad
cinema.
Two and a half hours from you. Yeah. Much closer from me, which is great. And I had a really good day, because it's been, since I changed jobs in the last year from one publisher to another, I've not been to any of these conventions, which is where I see lots of our authors and friends, people I really like in the business and in the fandom of SFF. And I hadn't realized how much I'd been missing it. I was a bit anxious about, oh, I need to network and be friendly and stuff. All these things that I don't feel that I am. Turns out it's fine. It was a really nice day and a lovely time chatting with all of my friends. And so I feel very upbeat and chipper about that.
That's
and also
great.
I've been to the Lego shop today, so I don't care about anything in the world.
I've noticed that you're especially chipper today, actually.
I've got a bag of Lego over there. Yeah. I could not be happier.
Where am I? Yeah. So actually, I was explaining to you, Matt, earlier that I've had a busy day today. I facilitate a group for therapists like myself. So we meet on a monthly basis. It's kind of a peer support, peer development, peer supervision group. So sometimes we're talking about where we're at, sometimes in relation to work. Occasionally, it'll be talking about struggles with clients, talking about topics and that kind of thing. So I've come straight from that today. And so I'm trying to think about what I was speaking about there. And what I was speaking about there is coming to terms with being a dad, actually. Mm. And what I realized is that just recently I'm feeling the pressure of that, and I'm realizing how challenging that actually is. I've been a stepdad, for a long while, and I'm certainly not kind of the cliched bloke that just doesn't know how to hold a baby or anything like that. And a family is what I've always wanted. And my daughter is 14 months now. And it's fair to say that at the moment, she is at times quite challenging. She's teething, she's been unwell. So I've been reflecting on that today, feeling pressured and tired and questioning myself and that kind of thing. So I'm on the whole very good, but yeah, I'm tired and feeling the strain of being a parent at times as well. Definitely.
The short version is it gets better for a few years and then it goes rapidly downhill.
Yeah, I've heard that. You know, I probably feel more equipped to handle moody teenagers and misbehavior and that kind of thing. I think what I've found difficult is my poor little daughter being like crying or distressed and not quite knowing what it is that I can do to soothe her or calm her down, you know.
I guess they don't know either.
No, exactly. And I think that's probably what the difficulty is. Mm. And as I'm feeling the pressure of that, I'm thinking, oh, God, what's wrong? Or even feeling overwhelmed and a tad frustrated, then feeling a bit guilty about that and thinking, oh, I should be handling this better. You know,
one of those shoulds,
you know, which we've spoken about in previous episodes. So that's where I'm at. I'm good on the whole. But that's very present for me because I've been speaking about it this afternoon with some peers.
That's an interesting state. Maybe that would be a good subject generally for
a future podcast.
I mean, I'm not a parent, so I can only speak from the other end of it.
Yeah.
Or from observing, you know.
From not being a parent.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah, absolutely.
As a non-parent, I'm very happy with other people being parents. This is fine. but yeah, I've got plenty of experience of seeing my friends and family having kids.
Thinking about the topic that we are handling tonight.
Yes, we haven't mentioned that yet.
Yeah. So, I mean, Matt, you said that actually I'm not quite fine, and here are the reasons why. It would have been really nice if what you said was that you were feeling anxious and worried about the prospect of death and existence, because that would have tied in well. So a bit frustrating that that's not what's
bothering
you.
Yeah, I mean, think about that next time.
That generally is what climate change leads on to.
Oh, okay, yeah, so. Yeah. And actually, I suppose something of what I'm talking about, being a parent, is a loss of what my life once was and what my life is now. Technically. Mm. Nice little segue there, making it fit. But yeah, tonight's topic is grief and loss. I think we first said bereavement, but then we thought that actually grief and loss still could be talking about bereavement, but that actually we feel grief and loss for lots of things potentially, don't we?
Yeah, I think it's a much broader thing. I suspect the feelings that are involved in feeling loss for different things, including family and friends, are mm-hmm. actually very similar.
Well, some would say they are, definitely.
Mm.
The first thing that popped to my mind about this topic in general was this classic thing about the stages of grief, which I'm sure lots of people have heard of.
Is it five currently? I forget. I lose track a little bit.
I'm gonna be sure that we.
I would like to try and guess them. Is it denial?
Correct.
Rage.
Ooh. Anger.
Anger.
Yep.
Guilt.
No.
Relief.
No.
Damn it. Acceptance.
You've lost your way. Acceptance is definitely one. That's the last stage, yeah.
No, that makes sense. That's the end. So there's one in between.
So you've got denial, anger, two more, and then acceptance. So you're looking for two more.
Grumpiness.
Depression is one.
Depression.
You're just naming the seven dwarves now, aren't you?
Sleepy.
Grumpiness, sleepy. They're all falling the depression, I think.
I feel like there should be a positive one in this because they're also grim.
Acceptance is probably the most positive one. I'll give you a hint.
Is the one where you just happy.
Prison? No.
Prison. so you do denial, you do anger, then you go to prison for a while, and then you come
guilt,
out.
Then you pass go.
Is there not a guilt bit in there somewhere?
No, there isn't. After what there the is prison, something yeah. about kind of... I suppose it makes sense that it's a precursor along the way to acceptance. It's where you're not quite accepting it and you're trying to maybe say that it hasn't happened or whatever. It's in between denial and acceptance is bargaining, actually. So
oh, really?
What can I do to make this go back to the
way? Oh, that's interesting.
So denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance.
Huh.
And they're all part of a framework that Elizabeth Kubler-Ross came up with. So she's the person that came up with that.
Are they supposed to be in that order, or are they just...
Well, there's one thing in itself. I think a lot would argue that you don't necessarily pass through them in an order, but yeah, they are presented as an order, typically.
And they're sort of... I mean, I can see how those are kind of recognisable.
You pass through the stages, so
sure.
to speak. Yeah. Speaking as a psychotherapist, something I'm always saying to people is that grief is a very individual process, though. And we say this every single episode, actually.
Wait, Wes, are you saying that people are sometimes different from each other?
I am.
What?
Yeah.
Okay.
There isn't a right or a wrong way to grief. And I think working with grief, I think that always comes into play. So maybe there's the guilt thing, actually.
Mm.
Might not be a stage of grief, but I find that a lot of people feel guilty that either they're not doing it right or they're not feeling something they should feel. Or
I guess I was thinking of sort of survivor's guilt.
Which is
a thing, isn't it? You know, if you're the one that survives a car crash or you survive like the death of your children or something, and again, your shoulds, you know, it feels should have been me, should have been someone else. Mm. Maybe that's. I guess you could wrap that up in bargaining.
Could I
swap me for them? Mm-hmm. Which you obviously can't because we don't have time travel.
That reminds me of something else. Something that people would refer to as complicated guilt, complicated grief, and so. Feeling grief and loss following maybe like a traumatic incident or a natural disaster or something quite extreme.
Hmm.
You know, you'll hear that term used, complicated grief.
Sorry, what's the bargaining one? Can you go, have you got any further on that?
So what did you just say there about bargaining? I think you're hitting on what some people would describe it as there.
Yeah, so yeah, if I could change how it worked, you know, I would give my life for whoever it was that is now lost. You know, if I could go back in time and make it right, I would give myself for this other person instead, or I would change something. But I guess it's a weird thing because it's kind of metaphorical because clearly you can't do any of those things, so which is super frustrating.
A lot of what ifs and if only and shoulda, woulda, couldas, maybe. Could be tied into that. But even kind of, what if I could do this and that would make up for what happened? Or I'm just looking now, actually, because I wanted to remind myself of the order and make sure we didn't miss anything. If I look at what's said here under the bargaining, it's kind of like a temporary truce, is what it says here. Examples, like, what if I could devote the rest of my life to helping other people?
And lots of people do that constantly. I mean, and you know, no decrying, but lots of people who suffer loss, especially when it's
very high profile or very dramatic or seem to turn towards that to try and, you know, have some positive outcome to the whole thing.
Well, I was going to say, why do you think that people might do that?
Well, I think it is that. I mean, I think if you've, you know, if you've got a void, a massive
that's
void
the word
in your
that's
life.
To my mind is a void. Yeah, absolutely.
I was considering it as a repentance, I guess. Yeah, if it's something, if you're suffering loss, and it was to some extent your fault, not wishing to label anybody as being to blame,
but in inverted commas.
Well, but it might be. You know, we can screw stuff up all the time, and that can lead directly to losses, whether they're bereavements or other things.
Yeah.
You know, so you can. Repentance is a strong theme of religion here, that we can make up for the things that we've done by doing something different instead.
Mm-hmm.
Never changes the past, but we can assuage that guilt to some extent. And I guess loss can be transformative in that sense. You realise that you always wanted this thing and it's now gone forever, and that can cause a change in you that leads to different behaviour. I would guess that most of the time it doesn't, because it's a phase that you move through. So even though we might often have, you know, I'm going to do this differently, I'm definitely going to exercise every day so that I don't end up like my relative who died of, you know, heart complications, I could fix that. But since it's just a phase, we can kind of get through that and forget about it a lot of the time in lazy human brains.
I mean,
I would definitely wonder that.
I mean, it made sense to start by talking about what the kind of what some of conventional thinking is around grief and loss, but do any of us have reflections of our own experience of bereavement, seeing as that's what we're talking about at the moment?
I was talking to the kids the other day about it, actually, and it came up about my daddy died, and I think, and we were chatting about how loss can come about really quickly, or if you know it's coming, you know, and particularly, you know, if you're in this place where your parents are older, then you've sort of got used to this is what's going to happen, whereas if it happens much earlier, it's... So I had both. My mum died when I was relatively early, and my dad died relatively recently. But I said to the kids that with my dad, it was quite easy to deal with, because I had two and a half years where I was helping to look after him in a distant sense. And I spent loads of time with him. We chatted lots, and we got really close, much closer than we ever had been. And so when he actually did die, although it was horrific, it was all right. You know, it was dealable, and I was grateful that I had that time. And then the thing I was trying to relate to them is the people who have to deal with it when they don't have that time. I'm only crass as like a way of saying goodbye or something. Do you know what I mean? But it was like that. You know, we spent two. You know, I can remember a really good time where we were like, we've been to the hospital once, and we drove past this Chinese chip shop for about 11:30 in the morning. And we just thought, well, we can't eat here, can we? It's 11:30. And we just thought, yeah, we can. We just stopped the car net. Do you know? And that's in my head. And he was never like that, really.
He was never like...
Well, just, you know, what does it matter, you know?
Fly of the
just let's
pants
go
in
eat.
The moment.
You want to eat, let's just go and eat. Yeah. I mean, it's not a big thing, is it? But
it's been big enough to stick in your mind.
Yeah, it is. But it must be really difficult. I mean, It was difficult when my mum died, because it was never expected, you know, it just happened. And so there wasn't that time to do that. And I think that's a big, big thing, isn't it? You
know? I think there's a lot to be said for that. And I've heard that kind of thing a lot as well. And actually, what's been hinted at, and I think there's some logic in this, is that perhaps we're able to start grieving early. It's like you start grieving before the fact. And you're able to do some of the work, like in hindsight or something.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot to be said for that. Reflecting my own experience of bereavement, I suppose in some ways I'm fortunate in that I haven't had lots and lots of really significant bereavements like some people have. I've lost people in the past and been impacted by losing people, but it's not someone I would class as like a key figure in my life until I lost my gran. She passed away in 2015, right when I was finishing up my psychotherapy degree, and it floored me. Absolutely floored me. Not something I think I could have ever prepared for. My mum and my gran kind of brought me up together. They were both my parents.
You don't know it was going to happen. Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. So in contrast to some of what you were just saying, that was the biggest thing for me, the shock of it.
Right.
So and then talking about guilt and some of those feelings afterwards, kind of what you mentioned there, Nick. I think that played into some of my experience. My gran was in hospital. My gran had a lot of health conditions and medical problems. Always kind of battled through and marched on, and I suppose it never really entered my head that she would ever kind of not be here, or that she wouldn't make it. At this time, she was in hospital, and at the time, I think we all just thought that it was going to be a visit to hospital, a bit of respite, she'd be okay, and she would get back home like she always did. And then I went to see her and then went off to uni for the weekend. I did it at weekends. And then got the phone call from my sister telling me that she'd died. Mm. And I was just, it was a punch in the face. Mm-hmm. And so it was the shock of it. I didn't expect it. But then straight away was that thing, I should have been there. Mm. It was horrible, horrible. I think that quite logically would be a different experience to expecting and knowing that it was coming. Or not that any is easier. I just think that they must be different experiences.
I think I've got a good mix of those. Say when my granddad was ill for quite a long time, he'd had a stroke when I was quite young, and so he'd never been quite right. So for pretty much my entire memory of him, he'd always been somewhat withdrawn, and it kind of got worse over the years. And eventually was in a home for a few years, and my nana was visiting and stuff to sort of make sure he was all right. So that wasn't, that felt kind of inevitable. At some point he's going to die. And what's worse is, in some ways, that would also make my nana's life easier. Because then that burden, because people who are very ill or require a lot of care are in a sense of burden. We talked about this last time. The weight of other people's mental health and health issues on a person, that role of caring is rough.
Yeah, we did talk about that last time. Yeah.
I felt that. So when he finally died, it wasn't in any way a surprise, and because he'd been ill for a very long time, it was like, okay, that's all right. This is sad. But this feels, it makes sense. It makes sense. It seems like a natural process. But then when my nana died, she died, fell ill very suddenly when she was visiting with my sister in Wales, and was hospitalized overnight after kind of throwing up blood in the kitchen. I got a call going, nana's in hospital. And That was a huge shock, and my biggest regret is not immediately going over, because by the next day, when I could conceivably have gotten there, by she was already gone, and that guilt for not showing up for someone who, and that's where it's kind of not daft, but it feels kind of daft to me, is racing on to see someone who would have been unconscious and unaware of my presence. The idea that being there would have made any difference at all is kind of daft, but I guess that's how we balance these things in our head.
Yeah, I can hear you getting logical as you're talking about
that.
Yeah.
Always apply rationality to kill feelings.
You're good at doing 21% that.
21% of the time.
I had the same thing with my dad, even though it was going through. I left in the hospital, went to see his sister. And he died within the hour that had gone away. And that's the only regret I've got in my life, I think, that I didn't just stay there. But
so you talk about the regret as well, and you did. Mm. And I just want to check something, and maybe you could say. But so yours was, you said that kind of thing of, like, me going there would make any kind of difference to the outcome.
Mm.
Now, I was thinking about the regret I feel, and mine isn't related to that at all. What was your regret?
I should have just stayed there,
Because?
Well, because I probably could have helped him, couldn't I?
Okay. So yours is about altering the outcome? Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, he would still be dead.
Or you could have met it easier, or... you could have helped.
I think if you're in hospital, and it's good to have someone there to bat for you, isn't it?
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. So that's a different thing. My thing was that I didn't get to say goodbye.
Mm.
And I suppose that's where some of my anger came in later on, if we're going to keep referring back to these stages of grief.
Sure.
I should say that this is not, I mean, it's pretty widely known and widely referred to, the stages of grief, but it's not the only kind of set of thinking about grief. But I think people tend to think about it in those kind of terms. I think everyone's heard of at least some of them.
Yeah, it's become a really popular conception of how
it's kind
it works.
Of like a
real
benchmark
popular psych.
Kind of, thinking about loss. But yeah, my experience was like the shock of it just floored me and didn't know it was coming. Mm. But the regret that I felt and was about that I wasn't there, I couldn't say goodbye, and that was some of the anger. I think that fueled some anger for me. I can feel some of it now as we're talking about it.
I can see it, man.
Yeah.
It's weird, isn't it? I think for both Nana and Grandad and my grandpa earlier, yeah, the thing that sort of soothes it is like, well, they were already quite old. You know, there's that thing when someone dies, you go, oh, 98, they had a good innings. You know, none of my family ever lived that long. Yay, looking forward to the next 20 years. But I think we do soothe ourselves like, oh, they had like a good run. That's as if there's a time when it's okay for people to die.
Yeah, it's like
that's justifying definitely a feeling,
it
isn't it?
Yeah. Isn't it? Like, oh, well, it's okay but when a child dies, that's an absolute tragedy, you know, because it's too soon. And it is an absolute shocking tragedy, but you're right, there's something about kind of that it's more acceptable or expected, or
there's
okay
some social
or okays, or
aren't there, for that. Whereas like when my uncle died, he like fell off a cliff in Scotland, and we didn't know. I found out because he didn't turn up for one of our shows at the Glee Club in Nottingham. He was there, always there at the end, and the end of the month show. And I vaguely remember that he was away on a walking holiday, was going to be back for the show, but it all gets very busy. So I didn't really think about it. I didn't like tell my mum or anything that he wasn't there, because people are adults. You don't tell people that, you know, your brother didn't show up. Where the hell is he? It doesn't really occur to you. It's only a couple of weeks later when it's like no one's heard from him. His work's rung.
Wow.
You know, my mum to go, you know, Colin's not been in. Do you know where he is? And then we had, I don't know, 6 weeks of trying to find him.
So that must have affected your experience of losing him.
That's hideous. Yeah, that was crazy. There's overwhelming sense of numbness when you find out that someone's missing, and that sense of, well, they could still be alive. You know, they could just be crippled at the bottom of a cliff, but still alive. You know, could still find them. My stepdad managed to figure out where he must have been through his online map thing, for his route. But yeah, it took weeks to find him, and they had the Lock Harbour Mountain Rescue Act, did great work finding him, but you know, it never speak.
That makes me think of closure actually as well, just as you were talking about that in between that limbo period of not quite knowing what has happened.
Oh yeah, I mean, in terms of like an extended period to grieving, you know, but you don't know if you should be grieving at that point.
Well, and it makes me think of people, you know, like if someone goes missing and just never returns.
Yeah, that must be appalling.
I mean, it's loss in one sense, because you've still lost the person, haven't you?
And also it's because loss is, I feel to a great extent, is about what you're missing, not that the other person's missing.
I get that. Yeah.
Which is why I say I'm sorry for your loss. It's not. I'm not sorry that your father or granddad's gone, because I don't know them. I'm sorry for how you feel and how it's going to affect you that person is no longer there.
Well, that's quite a literal way of thinking about that. I hadn't really considered that before.
That's how it always feels to me.
Yeah, that actually what they are sympathising with or trying to empathise with is how you're impacted by what has happened.
Yeah, and I think that's always what I thought it was. I could be wrong.
I hadn't considered that before.
But yeah, it makes sense to me. And I think for me, closure was kind of just speaking at Cole's funeral. I did like the family, I've forgotten the word for it, eulogy. I'd done it for my Nana as well. And that's kind of fun in a lot of ways. All the funerals I've been to have been quite entertaining. I've had good speakers who say fun things about people and meet people who say fun things about them. I think the process of nailing that into words that you can more or less get through without choking, and that includes some sort of lighthearted bits, is good. But also we went to scatter my uncle's ashes a year later, where we went, and I'm still not entirely sure this is a good plan. We went back up to Scotland, scatter his ashes where he died. And Mum and I have talked about this before. Like, wait, is that? He didn't mean to die there. You know what I mean?
Well, you think in the afterlife, he's thinking, why have you brought me back here?
Yeah. I think it was a great family activity, and it was really good.
I'm trying not to laugh.
Yeah, no, it's all right.
I shouldn't laugh at that. But it was.
Do, because it was quite an entertaining journey. And you know, I was sort of like, is this really, this isn't where he wanted to end up, but he's going to be now. And in fairness, the other like half kilo is in a boot in my mum's garden, which is fine. Also, scattering ashes is potentially hilarious. as we were scouting, like fistfuls of ash, not really paying attention to what direction the wind's blowing.
Yeah.
So you like throw a big handful of ash, like whoomp, all over my sister. for weeks we're just finding like bits of human ash, or I guess mostly coffin, in the seams of our clothes and pockets and stuff. Really weird. And you got the taste of it and stuff.
Oh God! I'm trying to resist. It's like he's still with us. He's still here. Oh.
He's still very much inside me. All very odd. But that the process of doing that and having this whole trek up through this really hard to get to point down a glen past Loch Ness and God knows where it actually is, and not being able to actually figure out where the actual place was anyway, and just sort of throwing this ash around. Ridiculous activities. But
I don't want to knock us off the track or anything, but. Just that little moment.
Stop it.
Oh, God. Oh, stop it.
You can enjoy it, man.
Oh, no. Listen, right. Regroup. I'm boiling hot here. What I was going to say is this whole situation right here, right now, me not wanting to laugh, but then laughing and all of that is the other side to this topic, or another part of this topic is like the British approach to death.
Mm.
This kind of, I'm sorry, I'm just laughing because Matt's wiping tears from his eyes.
We're laughing at your pain, Matt, or your happiness. I'm not sure which.
But there is a Britishness, isn't there, about kind of things? That's something we could talk about, and I didn't want to sidetrack us. I just wanted to flag it up there. Mm. But on what you were saying, That was about some of
that. Oh, we've lost Matt entirely now.
He's gone. For you guys at home, you can't see this, but he's just
a mess. Matt's vibrating with red face and tears. It's remarkable.
Isn't there a line in a song, "I'm the kind of guy that laughs at a funeral"? There is, isn't there?
So. That makes sense. I've laughed at most of the funerals I've been to.
What you were talking about and what I was going to latch onto was the closure aspect of it. I spoke at my gran's funeral as well.
It's good, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it was difficult. I found it difficult.
Sure.
But I'm glad that I did it. And we did. We scattered my gran's ashes the following year also, funnily enough. Mm. We went to the Lake District and went out on a boat. It's a trip she'd done and really enjoyed. And so it felt quite apt and nice to scatter the ashes there.
Nice.
But yeah, as you said, the thing about the ash blowing and all of that kind of thing, I recall there being a moment where it didn't quite go.
Well, it's the end of the beat. Two-thirds way through Big Lebowski, isn't it? Where they got the coffee can of ash, all over whoever. I can't remember who the actors are now.
But it was really nice and solemn and just what was needed. How are you doing, Matt? You're all right?
I'm all right. I thought it was getting a bit too somber then, but we've sorted through that. That's good.
But there are lots of odd things like that. So I remember from when my grandpa died, he was younger, he had a stroke while in Corfu, which is also quite shocking. I was only like 14. It's like, Christ, okay, people can die now. That sucks.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was all quite complicated. But so when we got back, the thing that I remember most is having my Aunt Jen from Sweden over with my brother, sister, and my dad, and my stepmum, and we went to see his body. It's the last one I've been to see. I've not wanted to see anyone else's dead body once they're gone, because it's weird and they're waxy and they're not really there, and it's not really them anymore. And so we all sang Robbie the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
all your stories about death just ending laughter. And
and this time we dressed him as a clown. And no, we didn't do that. That would have been horrible. But yeah, it seemed like a necessary thing. It reflected, I guess, aspects of the sort of ridiculous stuff that he did that was a lot of fun and seemed more relevant than all just going, oh, aren't we all very sad? We are all very sad, but that's not necessarily a useful way to express that.
Well, I'm not sure. I don't know. I disagree with you a little bit there. Well, for you, there you
indeed.
Go. There's
like,
a key
remember,
thing.
We're all individual.
Absolutely, yeah. I also think that there's something potentially important about staying with the sadness of it, actually. Hmm.
We were talking in the office because we part of the pay the mortgages through events about having a different event company. One that specialised in funerals, putting the fun back into funerals.
I'd forgotten about this.
It's still an ongoing thing. Mm. So we were chatting about what we could do, have somebody coming along, because I heard about Nick's, the eulogy
Nick gave, a friend of mine had gone to it and said it was fantastic and it was really important. And the thing with me, lots of feelings you go through, you hear something and they don't really know the person or it's not very well, you know, thought through. So we thought, you know, maybe you could provide people who could do it in a manner that they want and give it a bit more substance. Or maybe you could just have it for acts, you know, for musical acts at the wake afterwards, something, you know, stuff like that. And so I was telling my kids this, that we should do this. And what do you think? See what they thought. And they said, oh, yeah, that'd be good. It'd make it, you know, make it easier at funerals. And then my daughter says, you could have it. And I was thinking, you know, that one we chat about where you could hire someone who stands aloof on the hill with an umbrella in a black suit sort of thing to give it that sort of thing. And she said, why don't you, you could have it so they could dress up as the person who's died, couldn't you?
You see, I would love that. Lookalikes. The Green family turn around and everybody in the audience looks like the person that's just died. That'd be amazing.
So at some point the funeral...
Well, it's better than a pop-up coffin. Come on.
So at some point the funeral, the that might be my next... commercial venture.
Okay.
But I'm
stunned. I don't know.
These are all, I mean, as the service and the funeral, these are all ways of diffusing grief and
enabling
people to process it in a way. Because and that's why I think it is about you. Because obviously the funeral isn't for the person that's died, because they're dead. They're not going to appreciate it. They don't care. They don't know it's happening. The funeral is clearly, and the service is clearly for everybody else.
Well, a lot of people do care about the funerals. A lot of people plan their own funerals.
They do until they're dead.
Well, yeah.
And they don't know whether or not those wishes are going to
be acted. The idea of respecting the memory of and or commemorating the life of.
People don't know, do they?
Attitudes of what a funeral is. It has become kind of... like production line-ish, hasn't it? You know, that there's become a standard way to do a funeral and people run through the regular motions.
I'm
all for people wanting to do it in an individual way. Or
my auntie, who I got on really well with, and she died in her 50s, and she was more of an atheist than I am. I mean, she was absolutely... And I walked out of her funeral because it was a really religious funeral.
Okay, yeah.
And I thought it was terrible. And obviously... That wasn't respecting her wishes whatsoever, you know, it was just for everybody else.
So that was about her, even though she wasn't there, wasn't it, you see?
About everybody else. Oh, thought,
your
yeah.
Views,
yeah.
So you were thinking of her in that moment, weren't you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, she was one of the biggest atheists on the planet, and the whole service was about her going to see God and in a better place and stuff.
That's one of the reasons my stepmom's is a humanist celebrant for funerals and stuff, so you do get that personalised... this thing that is about that person's life rather than, yeah, from an atheist perspective, you know, songs about someone else that aren't really about that person.
A potential another staff member.
Yeah, indeed. It is interesting the things that we need to do that. And some of that is a degree of formality. Yeah, we talked about forms of death that we used to have last time, you know, where people dress in black for a year and there'd be like official mourning.
Yeah.
There'll be like a formal process that...
And that kind of relates to what I was just saying. There's perhaps like a cliched Britishness about death and loss. And then different cultures around the world all kind of approach death and loss very differently, don't they?
I rather like the gallows humour that seems to come with it over here. I find that very engaging. The appreciation of the darkness... I quite like, but I suspect that's kind of a humanistic atheist thing as well. You know, if you're going out with a view that, you know, that's it, it's over, there's nothing after that, it takes away any additional stories about what might happen beyond it, and you have to fill that with something else.
I think
you can only fill it with appreciation of what's come before, and some humour seems to me to go with that.
I think we get most of our work from the people who are about to die. You know, they want to book something at the funeral to make it a bit different or a bit about them, and lots of people who
The entertainment's company. Entertainment's company. But
there we go. It is entertainment. Yeah. My favourite one was having Death himself at the funeral. So we're there on the way out, greeting everyone, saying, "See you soon. See you soon. See you soon."
You see, I'm really appreciative. This entirely aligns with how I
feel
about it.
I want to make clear that I appreciate all of this and I find it hilarious. But there's a little bit of me as well that like wants to not to lose kind of the serious note to all of this as well. Just given that we were just talking about losing someone traumatically, or you know what I mean? And I suppose where I'm coming from as well is having sat across from a lot of people, lives devastated by loss. So I'm laughing because I find it entertaining, but there's a bit of me that's trying to pull myself back.
But the humour doesn't detract from that, does it?
Yeah. Say again, sir?
The humour doesn't detract from the feelings, you know? Like,
no, it doesn't. Yeah. But it also could, because humour could be a really good defence mechanism.
I remember my dad, about 2 hours before he died, one of the last times I saw him, he was on a hospital bed, and the consultant was talking to us over him as though he wasn't there, because he thought he was out for the count. And he opened his eyes, and the only thing he said coherently after that, he corrected the consultant about something that the consultant was wrong.
Brilliant.
And that was pretty much one of the last things I heard.
And that would be something really good to laugh about afterwards, wouldn't it?
Oh, it was brilliant.
Yeah.
And the consultant,
and I'm all for, I mean, don't get me wrong, like, I've sat speaking with family members, and we'll think about something that, like, maybe a way my gran was, or one of her ways, or, you know, a funny story or something. Do you remember that time? And of course we laugh, you know. But I'm going to share just a little bit more of where I'm at. I think also, I still feel the tenderness and the loss for my gran. And so I think while we're talking about this as a topic, I'm thinking about that. And so I also find it hard to get too lighthearted about things as well.
Sure.
Because the two can't mix for me, because actually I'm not prepared to... I don't find it funny that my granddad, of course. So it's, I'm in a weird place. I'm feeling mixed right now, actually. Yeah.
No, I get that.
And I'm trying to be real about where I'm at in response to what we're talking about.
I wonder how much it's because that feels like kind of a betrayal. Like, yeah, if I'm laughing at that, I'm betraying that memory and stuff. And
yeah, I'm not sure. I'd have to think about it a little more. But
one of my favourite things was sitting with my dad doing his will.
Yeah.
And we were just laughing about, you know, because he basically wanted to give everything to me and my three siblings. And then there was some for the niece and nephews and stuff. And we were just joking around about which ones he'd like more. Maybe we should, because the siblings weren't going to get it till they're 25 or something. And so we were joking about maybe that one should be 35. Just tell them it's a typo, but it's the law now. And do you know, and I don't think I've ever been closer to anyone than my dad. I mean, he wasn't actually my...
Biological
father, but he was there since I've been three.
Yeah,
or something,
he was, you know, your dad. Yeah,
absolutely. And so I understand what you're saying, but for me, it's completely, the whole thing's tied in with humour and stuff.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, no, and I get that.
I'm not even, for me, I'm not even too sure I could survive without that. You know.
That's what I mean about it being maybe a coping mechanism, and I suppose I want balance. I think I want us to come at this from a balanced point of view. There's a bit of my want slipping into this, perhaps.
No,
for the first time, actually, in this podcast.
Mm. There's a bit of people listening into it as well. There'll be people.
Yeah,
because
I would hate to think someone listening to this just lost someone and has thought, oh, it's about bereavement, and come to listen to this and just hear us laughing and cracking jokes about it.
Yeah.
there's something about balance, that's all.
No, I think that's entirely fair.
What are you laughing at, Matt?
I'm just a very bad person, I think.
No! Oh. I don't want this to come across wrong. Like, I can crack jokes about the darkest of subjects. Yeah, I'm just telling you how I'm feeling right now as we're doing this topic.
No, I appreciate that, man.
That's all. I don't know what it is.
It's just my brain. I think when you say that, I start thinking of another joke.
More jokes.
It is strange how this all sort of banner philosophy of how you view life and death, and whether or not you view death as, I guess, a significant event. I guess what I'm concluding is that I don't think that death itself is a significant event. It's the end of something, but in itself, it is not. It's not a thing, so it's not a part of someone's life. It's just, it's the end of it. It's not really part of it. So when I think about someone's life...
Why is it not significant, though?
I
think it's not significant because it's not part of it. I don't think it's significant in the same way that the beginning of your life is not significant either. It's the bit in between that is your life.
Yes.
And I'm doing a very fine slicing philosophically of that. And that means that when I think about someone who is now dead, and I'm thinking of your thoughts as much as anything else... I'm really not thinking of the bit where they died, because that's just the bit where they stopped being anything and stopped being themselves, where anything and nothing ever mattered again for that individual. Mm-hmm. So there's that bit doesn't really matter when I'm thinking about them. And that might just be me, and that might just be the way
yeah,
that
well,
divvy
I mean,
stuff
of course,
up in my head.
If that's what you believe, there's one thing. Because obviously,
well, I think it's what I believe. Who knows?
Yeah, sure. Mm. And people who have differing beliefs would obviously have a completely different perspective about that, which is fine.
Oh, sorry. Religion now.
Yeah, I suppose that's one. Yeah, one part.
It's one way of saying it. Yeah, you know? Yeah. Sometimes it's yes. Death and life aren't always tied to religion, are they? Sometimes they are. It's not necessary.
I don't have any religious beliefs. Mm. I'm not kind of.
Apparently, God's got a sense of humour, though. So
say again.
God's got a sense of humour.
Well, he's got to have, hasn't he? Really, helpful. If you look at things, it's got to be a twisted sense of humour too, perhaps. But
I guess I just see it in a very material point of view. So I don't. Mm-hmm. But then I think we've talked about this before. I don't really believe in continuity of self either, because from what we know about how the body actually works and the brain and what we know about the natural world, is that we're not really a persistent thing anyway. We're only the memory of what we last remembered of ourselves anyway.
So I suppose now we're getting into a little bit of what life and death is and all of that kind of thing. But
that's probably not
what
our
this
main
podcast
topic.
Is about. is mental health, one's mental health. And we're talking about the topic of bereavement and loss. And so when I think about that, I think of the impact of the people left behind.
Mm.
And so what you're saying is, this is the way you view loss then?
Yeah, I think so. I think some of that thinking... partly how I rationalise loss of humans, you know. Because, of course, I miss them. And I'm sad they're not with me now. This kind of sense that ends up with me sounding like a psychopath.
Of course, I'm sad they're not with me now, but
everything is fine. Yes.
Because what is life?
Yeah, well, indeed, and there's a horrible truth in it. You know, it is kind of fine because everything keeps going, and everything keeps going until you're not aware of it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And
there's the thing. Mm. Logically, I know all of that, and I think that's. Again, if I'm thinking about experiences of supporting people through bereavement, we can all know things logically. Just the same as we can rationalise about anxiety. Well, I shouldn't worry too much about that because it's just not going to happen, or it's not that likely, or I don't have any control over it and all of that. And there's a lot to be said for being able to get your head around that. But there's another thing entirely is that we can logic our way through everything, but the pain of loss is very real and is there and is going to be there. And whilst use of humour is a wonderful thing, I think it I don't know, I'm tying myself up in knots a little bit.
I just think
what we're talking about here is pain as well, aren't we?
I was going to offer a far more traumatic example for me. I've lost several family members, which have been very upsetting and sad and all, but none of them have ever affected me as much as losing pets.
Okay.
Which other people find, some people find that quite weird.
Yeah, some people do.
Other
people
like, oh,
I get it.
Yeah, it's only a cat. It's like, right. Well, I'll give me your child, and I'll show you, you know, why it's the same.
Oh, so now for the first time, we're seeing it seem to matter.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
So now we're starting to talk about different ways. We were saying at the beginning of this that you can experience loss of other things. Because in my mind, I was thinking about, well, loss of status, breakdown in relationships.
I think those are good too.
All of these kind of things. But actually, I hadn't considered that before we get on to talking about the different ways in which we could experience other kind of loss and grief. And maybe there's some parallels. Maybe you still pass through the stages of grief, for example, or whatever. But yeah, pets, what a brilliant example.
Because it feels like there's a ranking, isn't there, where like losing a person, well, actually, losing a child is the very worst thing that can happen. It feels like there's a ranking somehow.
Is this
somehow.
Just something you're coming up with in the moment now, is it?
No, this is a definite real thing in the world. I've no idea. But
what's the reference?
Yeah. The reference is my brain. It always feels like, the example is, losing a child is the worst thing ever. And then there's like losing your family and stuff and friends and whatever. And then much, much further down is the idea of like losing pets and things. And what I suspect is that the degree of trauma is tied to how much you kind of love or invested in a thing as well.
I think you're right.
Because we can lose family who we don't know.
It's about emotional investment, isn't it?
And that's why, when I see there's been a disaster in another country and, hundreds of people die, I'm like, well, I wish that hadn't happened. That's bad. But I can't honestly say that I feel any kind of personal loss or trauma or sadness about it. It's like, well, that's unfortunate. I don't know any of those people.
On a similar note, what about celebrity deaths? What are we thinking there?
Yeah, I was thinking about that earlier.
Some people are, you know, devastated by the loss of a celebrity, aren't they?
Yes, people like were crushed by the death of Prince, for example.
I've never felt that.
Do you know the one thing I've been thinking about for a while about? It's just how it affects you, and it comes into the whole pet thing, which I can't get, but anyway. But it's a whole personal thing. Mm. So, for instance, if someone very close to me had died, and it had absolutely devastated me, you think about the circle of people who it would affect. So, if you think about all the friends I know, some of the very close friends would be obviously upset for me and stuff, but how long would it take them to get over, do you know what I mean, over that? So the thing that I've been trying to get my head around is that it's actually quite a close circle, isn't it? You know, if someone dies, the effect isn't, do you know what I mean? It's really close in and really affecting you. And if that's true, then it's almost irrelevant whether it's a pet, a child, or somebody else. And it's just like you, me, or Nick, isn't it?
I think it's true. Although what you were saying just then that made my ears perk up more than anything else is the... how long does it take to get over it? And I think what we haven't talked about really is what I know we talked about the stage of being acceptance, but what is getting over something dying or something being lost?
I suppose different people have different attitudes about that, won't they?
Yeah, you know, there's... I mean, there's
some would say that maybe you never get to a place where you are okay with it, but you are less... you are more able to handle it or something?
Yeah, I still think about my Uncle Colin most days. I don't think of it in a sad context. I don't go, I'm not breaking down in tears in the shower. I'm just like, oh, yeah, Cole's I remember having an uncle. He was ace, and he's not here now.
Yeah.
There's not necessarily pain attached to it or trauma, whereas I think of one of our cats who we lost a few years ago that absolutely crushed me and Marilyn for a full year and whose impact is... I think probably still felt quite intensely by both of us.
Yeah.
You know, I don't see that going away anytime soon. I think that's...
And you were suddenly less jokey as well.
Yeah, much less jokey. But you know, if as Matt's saying, you know, I don't get it with pets, this is a thing you have in your house that you hug every day and spend huge amounts of time with every day and think about when you're not there. You know, I think that's the way in which, for many people, pets are exactly you know, a child. You know,
so it's the relationship, babies, then, is it? Is that what's significant?
So.
The relationship, the emotional connection.
I think it's something to do with that, isn't it? And that's where we'll find, I think, the link to other forms of loss, to status, with when your entire personality is invested in being super important.
Yeah.
And suddenly that's whipped away because.
So it's emotional investment, then, perhaps.
I think so. You know,
so what about celebrities then?
Yeah. Well,
because I must admit, I find that a little hard to grasp. You know, the celebrities passed away and people are like generally like crying, upset.
It feels like they're extremes. It's like Princess Diana's death, which
don't get me wrong, it's shocking and everything else, but I can't say that I'm hit with pain about it.
I mean, that one felt so way over the top, which is a great way of denying anyone else the right to their feelings. But, you know, the response to Princess Diana's death, for example, and the massive funeral and procession stuff just felt crazy because I had no emotional investment in her as a human being of any kind. I couldn't care less about the royal family. It is just another person. And I found it shocking to see the degree to which other people were affected by someone who they didn't know, had no...
Like, I'm not scoffing at it connection. Or anything. I wasn't
startled.
Impacted in that way. And I'm thinking, oh, I wonder what's that about? I wonder why, you know.
It's funny as well. I have the same view of the royal family, but I also think, I was listening to the two sons talking about it, you know, a few weeks ago, and people almost detract from the fact of their feelings because of her being Princess Diana. Do you know what I mean? And they forget the fact that for those two, it's their mother. That's the
reason. That was probably real for them.
Yeah. Mm. But and then you have all these other people who have never met her, and
that's the question: like, what have they personally invested in that person? You know, and I'm finding it hard to imagine
tea
what that means.
Plates and stuff,
you know. Well, you know, I do like a good tea towel. But I was thinking more actually the death of Alan Rickman, an actor who I kind of admired and enjoyed in many things.
Robin Williams is what I thought. Oh my God, Robin Williams has died. You know, like, I was like, oh, about it.
I think not enough to be
pushed to tears or anything. You know,
I think my other half felt like Alan Rickman's death as a kind of a kick. Someone who she'd really admired. You know, saw him performed live when she was quite young, and you know, and had created that emotional connection in a way that maybe I haven't done and I find difficult to people I don't actually know.
And I can think, and I can think, oh, that's sad. You know, obviously, I can think, oh, that's sad. Oh, what's such a shame. Or, oh, my goodness, I can't believe it. You know, shock about it. But,
but it doesn't have any underlying sort of emotional resonance.
Like a lasting emotional impact, yeah.
Do you ever think about the positive side to grief? So, for instance, one thing I've tried to find comfort in is the fact that if you take, for instance, my dad, so I went through all that and he died, but afterwards I was feel like I'm a better person because I've gone through all that with him. He's taught me loads in the last couple of years that wouldn't have happened if we weren't in that place.
I thought it sounded really lovely that you were able to spend that time together before he died.
But it's made me feel better because I now have a better perspective of the world and of what's important because he's died. Do you know what I mean? Because certain things, when people get bothered about stuff, now I think, well, you know.
So like someone leaves lessons or a kind of like a lasting impression on you or kind of alters your outlook in some way?
You know, if you go through something, it's going to have an effect on your personal life.
Transformative. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I feel like what death does is remind us of our own mortality, which is kind of trite, but it's so true.
Yeah, I was thinking of that kind of thing.
Which gives it, but what it also is an opportunity for empathy. You know, we often say that, you know, when you see your family, you know, weddings and funerals, those are the cases that bring people together. And the loss of something, and even though I'm kind of stunned by people's response to Princess Diana, if I were to think about it a little more carefully, what it gives me the opportunity to do is to develop some empathy for those people and try and understand and try and reach out and understand how other people might be affected by something that doesn't affect me.
Yeah, because some people might not understand like feeling the loss of a pet, might
absolutely.
I mean, I do, by the way. I totally get it. If I'm honest, especially since my daughter came along and seeing her and the dog and thinking, oh, she grows up, that dog's going to be a really good friend to her and all of this, and then thinking, oh, but then the dog's going to die. And
yeah,
oh my
knowing
God, that's
definitely
going to
end.
Mm. And then I'm going to have to deal with how my daughter reacts to the dog dying as well, you know. Little Jock, my Scotty dog.
Aww.
But yeah, just on what you were saying, Matt, I wonder if there's something around kind of priorities shifting or viewpoints about something changing, or that there is something that changes in us after having gone through that experience?
Well, it must have some sort of positive impact upon us because they must have affected our lives. Because we're in grief, they must have affected our lives in a positive way.
Yeah, otherwise, what are we feeling the loss of?
Oh, well, I imagine you can grieve for someone you absolutely hate.
I was just about to say that,
And part of that might be the regret that, you know, we got to punch him in the face or to claim whatever would have redeemed that relationship or you know, revenge or yeah, whatever it is. But I bet you can feel just as intensely for someone who you didn't like. I've been fortunate. I've not lost anyone who I loathed.
I have spoken to many a person grieving maybe a parent, usually a parent, with whom they had a very, you know, fractured, toxic, unhealthy, whatever kind of relationship with, you know, hated them, actually despised them, but then struggled, and actually all that did was mean that the grief was harder to get through somehow because they had these kind of conflicting emotions wrapped up in it.
Yeah, you want to kind of go good, and yet.
Yeah, and yeah, I'm in bits here, and that's I didn't think I would be, or I shouldn't be. Or
oh, that sounds horribly conflicting. I don't want that.
Mm.
Oh, there's a good motivation to stay on good terms with people.
Well, yeah. I mean, I haven't experienced that. I suppose it reminds me of that thing again of complicated grief. And by the way, I think they call it complicated grief because we've come back to this a few times in previous episodes, but things having a timeline in that we should only be so affected by something for so long or whatever.
There's a bit that feels natural. It's like, of course you're sad.
It goes beyond that, or if actually it's not straightforward to move towards whatever the end goal of getting past it is, it's complicated by some other factor, like the circumstances in which it happened or that it was traumatic, or there's sort of a PTSD element to it, or whatever. But we could literally talk for hours about this. I'm getting the feeling, actually.
I suspect we could probably find some slices that we do want to explore
to
further
revisit
at a later time.
We've only touched upon slightly the fact that we can feel lost for other things. We ventured into kind of pets, but there's a whole kind of thing on like lifestyle, identity, relationship breakdown. estranged parents, all sorts of things, isn't there?
Loss of a valued childhood toy.
Yep. Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, all sorts of things that I think we're going to find it's that emotional investment in the thing again, that it doesn't really matter what it is. If you're invested in it, its actual form and sentience or anything else doesn't actually matter at all. It's the degree to which we emotionally invest in things. And that's where we need to have empathy with others, that it will emotionally invest in stuff that we consider to be completely pointless.
I imagine that must be one of the kind of factors in this, that there's an emotional investment to something or someone.
Well, we should definitely come back to this.
I think so. Maybe if anybody listening has any kind of experiences they want to share, or like via our Facebook page.
Yeah, please do. Or if you just want to express your absolute horror of our lightness.
We should set up an email address, actually.
We should, that's easily done.
I think we also want people to complain about Nick's views on Princess Diana.
That's pretty likely. I'll definitely accept emails about that.
And another thing we haven't explored as widely, perhaps, is this kind of cultural thing, cultural approach to bereavement, rituals and that kind of thing. I think there's a whole lot wrapped up in this.
Yeah, okay. If anyone's got any actual answers to this, that would be ace.
Should we? Do you think we should try and wrap this up with kind of some personal feeling of how I overcame grief, or what helped me start to become more okay with it, or that was? I mean, you touched upon it with saying that there were some positives.
I generally do think that if when you've had time to think of things in a positive manner, which obviously takes time, doesn't it? You can actually see that without that, you wouldn't be the person you are, you know, it does give you a certain, hopefully it gives you a certain perspective on life that you wouldn't have had without that. If you go throughout life without any loss or any bereavement, you haven't got that perspective on that you probably need. And so I think it helps me deal with maybe with issues with finance, or with issues with short-term issues with other people, or with success or failure. It actually gives you a perspective on the fact that it's a lot of it's almost irrelevant, isn't it? You know?
I can see that. I don't think I've ever become a better person as a result of having lost anything. I don't think I've been changed as a consequence. What I'm more conscious of is that loss is permanent, and that the people and things that I've lost have permanently taken a chunk of me away that I'm not getting back. And I feel that being slowly whittled down. And I think that's continued even when the pain of losing someone or something has gone. I think that I feel I've always felt lessened throughout life from everything that I've lost.
Wes?
I suppose what I was thinking for me is there's a selfish part of me that still to this day it wishes that my gran could be here still. I know there's that cliched thing of, oh well, for some people it's they're in a better place, for other people it might be they're not suffering anymore. And I also get what you're kind of saying of that you could end up with some positives from it or from going through that experience. But actually, there's a bit of me that's like, no, I just wish you hadn't died. I just wish you were still here. And I recognise that's selfish. That's about me not wanting to feel what I feel that because she's gone. But all I can do is reflect on my experience. And I suppose the key things about my experience was the shock factor of it and feeling like I didn't get to say goodbye. And feeling like it was difficult to get some closure, if that's the right word. What are we aiming for, you know, to be more and more okay over time with the fact that this has happened, to be able to cope more and more over time? I'm not sure. Perhaps that is individual. But for me, what's helped is just to keep talking about it as obviously. I mean, that's kind of our mantra, isn't it? But genuinely, that has helped. To not hide away from feelings, to stay with them. And I suppose that's a little where I'm coming from with the humour, that I think whilst I'm all for humour and have a dark sense of humour at times, believe you me, I would hate for that to get in the way of feeling some stuff maybe I need to feel. But the other thing that's helped is for me is putting a plaque up and having a place that I could go and visit and spend time and sit and just reflect. and connect with my own memories of my gran and our experiences. She was cremated, as we said, so I suppose didn't have that gravestone to visit.
Yeah, I think that's a ritual thing to talk about all the time.
Yeah, a ritual thing, isn't it? So there's a plaque up in the park at the end of a street, and I will go and sit there still to this day from time to time. And so that helps me, I think. So, yeah.
Okay.
That's cool.
Should we call it a night?
I think that's it, yeah.
All right. Thanks, boys.
Until next time.
Until next time.
We are what we overcome. Exhausted with some great. If you've been affected by anything that we've talked about tonight, that's cool. We were kind of hoping you would be. If you haven't been affected by anything tonight, then that's great too. You're probably fine. Of course, if you say you're fine, there's a good chance you aren't. So you might also have been affected. And if you've been affected before, you probably will be again. Please talk to someone. It can get better, and together we can survive. We are what we overcome. And these poor little boys, grounded by the sun, paler by his side, but something strikes.